I'm Sasha Mayer, entrepreneur, mother, and co-founder of Mamava, the inventor of the freestanding lactation pod. My newest baby, The Bodacious Optimist, a podcast dedicated to celebrating and learning from the people who have inspired and helped me in my entrepreneurial journey. They are designers and storytellers, business leaders and activists who have challenged the status quo and thrived. Bodacious optimists believe that there are always solutions waiting to be unveiled. Welcome to the inaugural episode of The Bodacious Optimist. And I thought it would be fitting to set the stage by actually having my friend and colleague, Nikki Micco, who heads up our marketing department, interview me to set the context of why we're even doing this crazy thing. So Nikki heads up marketing at Mamava, and we've been working together for over 6 years. She's a former magazine journalist. She loves a good story. She keeps me in line, and she's always nudging me to tell more stories myself. Nikki is also a yoga teacher, mom to two teenage boys, a runner, a snowboarder, a semi-professional pizza maker, which is news to me. I often refer to her as my cheerleader, and indeed she was a cheerleader in her high school. We are both from the Midwest, myself from Ohio and Nikki from Western PA. And I'm so grateful to have her on our team and for her to be on the podcast interviewing me today.
Thank you, Sasha. I am so excited about this podcast. But I just want to ask you first, why did you start this podcast?
Because you made me.
But you wanted to do it, right?
Yeah, well, actually, I love the medium of podcasting, and I think that's because I'm a super multitasker and also very impatient. So I have been an early adopter. I've been listening to podcasts for as long as they existed. And I do, as I said, love the idea of being able to multitask. So if I'm cooking or if I'm taking the dog for a walk, to actually get an infusion of information or entertainment at the same time, that has been a great blessing in my life. And so I thought, yeah, it makes sense. Let's try a podcast.
Amazing. And so I'm glad I kept nudging, because you are a wealth of wisdom. You share it so generously, and you're just fun to talk to. So I wanted to kind of bring that out from behind the scenes so that more people could enjoy your stories and learn from you and the people that you talk to about, you know, solving the world's problems through design. So we've sort of alluded to this idea that you maybe are sometimes reluctant to dive into, or to maybe to be in the spotlight. And you sometimes refer to yourself as a reluctant entrepreneur. So I would love to have you explain that, maybe explaining how you're an entrepreneur, what you do, and then maybe just starting there.
I think I'm aptly called a reluctant entrepreneur. And it's maybe a little bit about being stubborn and impatient with wanting things to change that don't work. And that's perhaps connected to my background in design. But basically, the story of Mamava is my own experience wanting to be a breastfeeding parent, going back to work, loving my job, and finding that when I went out into the world, there was no good design for this really important phase of a human's life, which is to nourish a baby.
So, Sasha, I first met you when I was working in magazines, and you had started Mamava, creating lactation spaces for parents on the go. I hadn't been too far from my breastfeeding journey at that point, and you came to the office, and I was just in awe of you and your partner and my other colleague, Christine Dodson, and what you had started here in Vermont. Can you explain how you came to create a whole category of lactation pods? It didn't exist. You invented them.
Yeah, so the idea for the lactation pod really came because I worked for a design studio where my co-founder, Christine Dodson, also worked. We were breastfeeding parents who had a supportive employer when we returned to work. But because we were based in Burlington, Vermont, the vast majority of our clients were not here. And we were traveling. And in order to continue to breastfeed, you had to use a breast pump. And we constantly were finding ourselves in unsanitary and undignified places to use those breast pumps, which was usually a public bathroom, in particular in airports and convention centers and the places we went. We really believed that design could solve these real-world problems. We had an amazing supporter in Michael Jagger, who is the creative director for the design studio. And he gave us some time to incubate the solution within our current jobs. And we knew that it had to be a conversation starter, an object that would actually provide privacy, but also stand out and be specifically designed for this very discreet function of using a breast pump or breastfeeding. So finding that balance and what that design was for both the exterior of the pods and the interior was a big and long adventure before we even placed our first prototype.
So I have lots of questions. I'm first going to just start with a clarifying question. So you had a mentor at the design studio who said, in addition to your job or as part of your job, go ahead and create this product, this design function to solve this problem that you had identified.
Yeah, you know, we had worked for amazing brands like Levi's and Burton Snowboards and Lululemon and many, many brands in the youth culture areas. And we wanted to eventually take on a product and a brand that was completely our own. So sort of be careful what you wish for. We had done great design, but often that would leave our studio or leave our hands, and maybe it would go someplace and live in the world, and maybe it wouldn't. And there were decisions made around our brand designs that maybe we didn't necessarily agree with. So the idea to incubate solutions and brands in-house was a great opportunity to own the ideas holistically.
And tell me, what was your role? Who else was involved in the studio? What did that look like? What does incubating a whole new product outside of what you do in your day job look like?
We basically put out a call for ideas that would solve problems and had a brief with the audience, with the concept, with the problem that it was going to solve. And as we worked through it, Mamava was funny. We had a name and a logo far before we even had a pod to bring to the world. So coming at it, I think, was actually the right way. When you're creating a category, it's really about getting that idea adopted into culture. And so that conversation is really about the positioning and the name and even the logo. And then soon after, some prototypes that we could actually test with folks in the real world.
And I would imagine that working at a super cool design studio in Burlington, Vermont, not everybody on your team was super familiar with all of the intricacies of breastfeeding. So was your internal crew kind of your first focus group on what would stick and what would be confusing and what would land?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was interesting. The design studio started with the youth culture brands, with Xbox, with Burton Snowboards, and built our reputation from there. Eventually, just as the design studio grew up, so did my colleagues, and we started getting married and just building families. And so this was something that actually started to resonate with many, many of our colleagues. And I think, you know, for a studio of like 40 people, we had 7 people give birth in one year, about the same time that I had my first kid. And so it was something that resonated, and we had our own focus groups, right? So we had all those parents that we could actually test and do some rapid prototyping with and understand what was the most important thing for them in the design of a lactation pod.
And you had mentioned that it was really important for the product to sort of be eye-catching to start conversations. Can you explain that a little bit? If we're talking about breastfeeding, why was that important to you?
Because creating something that's new to the world, we wanted it to stand out. And we also wanted it to reposition something that had been sort of a drag for many people, like using a breast pump or being away from a baby, or even the challenges of breastfeeding in general. We wanted it to be repositioned as something joyous and an oasis and something that felt designed specifically for this very, again, discreet act. So the curved walls, the logo, which could have been about, you know, a mother and child or something more earthy. We wanted it to be the Happy Breasts logo. So it's kind of a wink versus something that's more serious. So design connotes values, and we wanted the people or the facilities that hosted our pods or that purchased our pods to create this expression of welcome and inclusivity.
So also to kind of bringing people along to understand sort of what the mission was, what you were trying to do, and ask questions and sort of stoke that conversation. Yes. Lots of people have passions to sort of solve problems or contribute to their communities in some way, and they have a day job. They have work that they're doing 9 to 5, right? And this is similar in your job. You had clients that you had to serve. And so how did you fuel this passion and, you know, push forward with progress on your idea and your product while you were working?
So I think that you would call me the sort of reluctant entrepreneur or the stubborn entrepreneur, in that even though I was long past my breastfeeding days when Mama Va finally got off the ground, I continued to see the problem wherever I went. My sister had kids 10 years after me, my young colleagues. I continued to see that they were suffering those same indignities, having trouble finding the place to use a breast pump, and the problem was still not being solved. And I was at a place where it's like, if nobody else is going to do it, I guess I have to. And I think I can kind of continue that. And it's always been mission driven. So our mission is not about selling pods. Our mission is about solving this problem.
So it's step by step and slow going. So this wasn't like you started with the idea with your friends at the studio in May and then you are launching it in September.
No. I think we had a design charrette where I pitched the idea in 2008, mm-hmm. and I didn't even leave the design studio until 2015 to officially hire our first employees of the Mama Va business.
So what, I mean, there's a personal trait there, right? Like what does it take to kind of see an idea through? What advice do you have for folks who are trying to press for change in terms of?
Yeah, I think being mission oriented and wanting to solve a problem is really what has driven me. And ultimately, it wasn't rocket science, right? We were designing an object for an unseen need. And there was a bit of needing to push culture for that, right? So we often talk about the challenge of creating the wave and then riding the wave we've created. And that comes from the conversations that we have with parents and moms, the public policies that we have advocated for and now have actually come to be true legislation. That's all work that's behind the scenes, but very much a part of what brought Mama Va to where it is today.
And obviously, to keep pressing forward for all of those years, you have to have some faith, some belief that you're truly going to be able to move the needle to make change. And how did that like what little bits along the way helped kind of propel you along and say, this is going to work. I'm seeing progress. What were those little hints?
I mean, frankly, the momentum has been built by the moms themselves, by the fact that we have amazing colleagues who have wanted to come work at Mamava and have believed in the mission as much as I have. And that has been huge. I think behind any entrepreneur, there are hundreds of people who also see the idea and think that there is an opportunity or a problem that's meant to be solved there.
Yes. I joined Mamava because I wanted to be part of the solution. I found breastfeeding challenging, even though I worked in publishing, surrounded by women who were protecting me at every turn. I traveled not frequently, and when I did, I had a mama bear sort of cordoning off space for me. And even then, it was really hard. So that was a big part of my joining. And I joined Mamava in 2018, and we've grown quite a bit. And I have always been so impressed by your ability to really, in general, just really nurture personal, professional relationships with other entrepreneurs, just the generosity of your time, but also in building a company. And even through these early years of startup where things can be really, really busy, you've created an environment that is sort of, you know, you've sometimes called it a maternal workplace culture. Can you talk about what that means to you and how
Yeah. So we talk about loving the matriarchy versus the other version of that. And I think that there can be a misconception that a mother is coddling or overprotective. But in fact, at least my mother, and I think a good maternal practice is really about growing your baby and your kids and getting them ready for the real world and giving them the independence through education and providing as much as you possibly can, but then allowing them, in the case of a business, to grow into their roles versus sort of a top-down, this is how it's going to be. And that's definitely how I've seen the business, and perhaps sort of contrary to that notion of a matriarchal type of structure. We also talk about team versus family, and that's really important. A lot of businesses or some businesses talk about this idea, but we're a family, and you know what, we're close, but we're not a family, we're a team. And you know, a team works together well. A team slots in people in positions where they're most needed, and teams evolve. And I think that's something that I wanted to always put a finer point on, because you know, when you are run by women, I think that there can be a misconception about some of those things. And in fact, you know, you're a business, and that metaphor of a team, I think, is a much stronger one to run a business well.
Just thinking about sort of building that culture, you've worn many hats at Mamava. You wore all the hats at the beginning, and maybe we're doing sort of more of the brand and marketing and communications, and then, you know, product, and then you were the CEO for a long time, and now as chief experience officer overseeing brand and product and people, you're really kind of in this realm of focusing on employee culture and speaking about it and really evangelizing what a healthy workplace culture looks like. So for folks who are listening who want to be transforming or just refining their workplaces to be more supportive of all employees, what advice would you give?
Well, one of the benefits that Christine and I had coming from the design studio and the brand strategy work that we did was we got to look at from the inside of a lot of companies, because a lot of strategy starts with even like the basic elements of company culture and builds out from there in terms of the experience that their brand is delivering customer. So I think that we took that very seriously from the beginning. We had a robust employee manual and benefits package before we even had our first employee. We also made the decision to be B certified, to become a B Corp, as a benchmark to build the business in the right way from the very beginning. And that was a really helpful tool for us to, as I think the expression is, start as you will go. And I make that recommendation to entrepreneurs for sure. Another thing, you know, to think about is, you know, in working with Christine, she's definitely the left brain to my right brain, and you're finding those partnerships to balance yourself out. So she's more about process and systems oriented. I'm more about creativity and intuition. And that was very deliberate. So when we were intrapreneurs at the design studio, it was very deliberate that we had an alliance there. And then I would say our first employees were that added complement to the dyad. And those folks became our cultural co-founders. So hiring people who were going to, again, complement you and bring those skill sets, you know, get the best people you can possibly find and give them equity if you need to recruit them in, was our strategy. And I think that worked really well for us.
Even if you're hiring to sort of complement your skill sets, you have been constantly reinventing, like Madonna, on your path at Mama Va, doing all of these different roles. What did that look like for you behind the scenes? Like, what were the bumpy parts? What were the most beautiful parts? What were the parts that were bumpy and because they were hard and you succeeded through them, the most fulfilling for you?
Yeah, no, the most fulfilling thing was actually acquiring our manufacturing. We did that in 2021, so we were sort of still in the heat of the pandemic. And it was taking something on that we hadn't done before. It felt scary, but it also felt like we could be more in control of our own destiny. And I love just being able to go to a place where tangible things are happening, where you have a smell and sounds and a whole different group of colleagues who are also connected to the mission and who are finding a different kind of meaning in their job. And that has been really, really powerful to me.
So bodacious optimism is actually one of our company values. And we have a whole set of them that kind of guide how we operate on all levels. Do you want to talk a little bit about, not all of them, but some of them, because I think they're fun and memorable and really guiding?
That's a good question, because it's an example of something we also had before we had our very first employees. We had a Mama Va manifesto, and we wanted to establish these brand values. And from my work as a strategist, I understood that these values were needing to resonate from the inside out and be just as useful in terms of how people operate and think about their jobs as how they think about their interactions with our partners and customers. So bodacious optimism was really an idea that we wanted to create some lightness in the world, and that we were doing something hard, but we could do it with good humor, and that would be a strategy actually to engage our customers and maybe have what could be awkward or hard conversations in the beginning. We work with a lot of facilities, and those tend to be sort of male-dominated professions. And in the beginning, less so now, talking about breastfeeding and breast pumping had to be a nuanced conversation, because it was physiology, it was breasts, but we were always wanting to be bodaciously optimistic that those partners would come to see our way and, you know, be folded into our mission. And that has really proven to be the case. Other brand values are this idea of yes and. And in a startup, you're inventing things as you go along. And this improv idea is about taking an idea and moving it forward versus putting up roadblocks or being pessimistic about it. So that one is one that probably drives some of my colleagues crazy because I am a real yes ander.
And I, when I say yes and no, we're not doing that. I am.
Yes.
You tell me that I'm not using
yes
that.
Yes, and I think I've trained you to learn that one. So those are good ones. And then, you know, we have one that's Keep It Simple, Sunshine. And that one is just, you know, if you can say it in one sentence, then a four-paragraph email isn't necessary. But really, it's a value around design. What can be taken away? What is the minimalist version of something that can be best experienced? And so that one applies to everything from that email to how we are designing and even delivering our pods and our customer service, for example.
And do you know what my favorite value is?
I don't. What's your favorite value?
My favorite value is we each have different gifts for the revolution, because I am definitely not good at all the things I want to be good at. And so, you know, that's great for work. It's just a really, I think, a nice thing. And I feel like a lot of people say that to each other.
Yes. And that one came from our very first colleague who's still with us today, Janet Stambolian, who basically saw an article about Mama Va's prototype in the Burlington Airport. She pestered me for a year before we even started the business and said, I think I can sell this thing. She's actually not someone who's had children or has breastfed herself. And so I said, okay, Janet, here is the list of people who have contacted us about this idea. You go call them back. I'll pay you commission. And if you can sell them, we're in business.
All right, switching gears, sort of. Well, innovation and creativity are super important to you. How do you keep yourself and all of us at Mama Va sort of continuing to be creating, trying new things, moving forward?
So another brand value we have is actually empathize to innovate. And I think the best thing you can do to empathize is to travel, to experience, to pay attention. I also am always challenging our team to think about context, and context of where our products live, context of the technology that exists one day to another, and how much that changes. And that's really hard, because you can get into your job, you can have your kind of blinders on, you can be in Burlington, Vermont, which is where most of our staff is located, and not maybe have the reality check of the broader world. And so I think that is something that I try to do and I ask our colleagues to do. But it's a real challenge because that context changes. Like the context of a healthcare facility post-COVID, the context of a service contract in the age of ChatGPT, and the kind of information people get and select, for example, the context of what the business was prior to lactation legislation and what it is now, where we now have more competitors. So the advice is to make sure that you're paying attention to the specifics of the context and the multi-layers of the context where your business or your work is being done.
Nice. And sometimes getting the context is, you know, having conversations, talking to people. And so on that note, what are some of the topics that you're most excited about exploring on this podcast?
I'm such a believer in the power of design to change hearts and minds and influence how we are in the world. And again, the fact that design does connote values. So talking to designers and other entrepreneurs, learning from them, talking to activists who are looking at the current context and not being okay with it and pushing for policy change, and knitting that all together into something that hopefully feels audaciously optimistic and inspiring, no matter if you are an entrepreneur or a new parent or an activist. We hope that we're going to be delivering all of that.
All right, to wrap things up, we're going to have a lightning round of questions here.
I'm not going to be that lightning fast, but okay.
Okay. What is one piece of advice you would give to anybody at any point? Your favorite piece of advice?
I think that thinking about progress over perfection is what allows me to keep my sanity. And those small wins count.
Nice. What is the proudest achievement of your life so far? It can be professional, it can be personal, it can be a combination.
My proudest achievement beyond my kids, who are amazing and surprising and have taught me more than I could have ever imagined, is definitely the fact that we created this category and we brought something into the world that didn't exist. And I always joke, well, I know what will be in my obituary, which is kind of a scary notion, but also a really proud one.
What are you audaciously optimistic about?
I'm audaciously optimistic about my kids' generation and their uncompromising drive to make change and to set different standards on what it means to be a human and to move forward in a complicated world optimistically. I'm excited about what comes from that, those different viewpoints.
The kids are all right, more than all right. And what else would you like our listeners of the Bodacious Optimist podcast to know? What keeps you up at night? What's your new sport?
Geez.
What else do we need to know about you? What did you eat for breakfast? I know you love those questions.
Yeah,
what are
like...
you reading right now? What's your favorite song?
Okay. So things I'm thinking about and reading right now, I actually love ChatGPT. I have used it recently as a running start from anything having to do with writing, including a birthday card and a speech for a conference. And
do you want our listeners to know that, Sasha?
Yeah, because more than half the time, nothing that ChatGPT delivers back to me is useful. But it's a running start. And yeah. So when you have so much on your plate, sometimes it's just fun to have that digital companion. And so besides ChatGPT, I'm really into this book, Eve, by Kat Bohannon. And it's about how the female body drove 200 million years of evolution. So I highly recommend that read. So, Nikki, have I answered all of your questions yet?
You have not answered for me your favorite songs. I just want to share with everybody that... Sasha often gets requests for like personal information about what she's reading or listening to. And you are such a problem solver, thinking of how to solve the world's big problems that, you know, those questions.
No, my theme song. Yeah, no, my theme song, which I played all through the
pandemic. Fun of you for that.
my theme song, which I played all through the pandemic, was that Shakira, Try Everything. So if I could have that as actually our music for the podcast, I so would.
And you used it as the inspo for the intro music. So
yes. So
yes.
That's one that just if I really need to get goosed up, I'll play some Shakira.
Nice.
And I also love the new songs on Beyonce's country music album. So, Nikki, did you get all the information you wanted from me?
No, but the good news is you're going to be sharing more of your story and sharing others' inspiring stories and conversations in the weeks ahead.
What do the people need to know?
The people need to know that they can find us anywhere they get their podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere else. They should subscribe so that they don't miss an episode. And if they want to learn more about us or get in touch with us, they can visit bodaciousoptimist.com.
Bodaciousoptimist.com. Join us on the pod.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Bodacious Optimist. You can support the show by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. To learn more about MamaVa's work making the world a more inclusive place for breastfeeding, visit MamaVa.com. And remember, we each have different gifts for the revolution.